Our next guest, new to the broadcast, but not new to this fight or this whatever, the pursuit of truth, as we're going to call it, the pursuit of truth. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Michael Rechtenwald is here on the Power Hour. He's a several-time author. I think he's written, I think, 7 books. He was a New York University professor. He hit the news, or made news, with that kind of thought crime situation going on. I'll let him tell a story about how he parted ways with NYU. His new book is called Thought Criminal. You know, very appropriate. Excited to have him on. MichaelRechtenwald.com is his website. Michael, welcome to the Power Hour.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. You are new. Our audience, they like to get to know our guests a little bit. Tell us just a little bit about yourself and why you wrote the book Thought Criminal.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I was a professor at NYU for 11 years. And, you know, actually I was a Marxist for quite a while. But I made some criticisms of what was going on there. Such as, you know, the social justice movement and the things they were instituting at NYU, like a bias reporting hotline where you could, like, turn in your professors if they made a bias infraction or, you know, a thought crime. And, you know, the safe spaces, trigger warnings, the way they were drumming all the speakers off of campus who didn't have the right thought. You know, I made a criticism of this. Within 2 days, they put me on paid leave and was denounced by a committee called the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Group, who basically said I was guilty for the thoughts I had. They said I was guilty for the structure of my thinking. And, you know, this opened up my eyes totally. I realized what totalitarians I was dealing with. And I just completely renounced the left. And then I sued the what happened is a bunch of professors, so-called colleagues, started an email circulating around about me through official email channels on NYU's listservs. And they were calling me every name in the book out of the blue, racist, sexist, alt-right, Nazi, you name it. So I sued NYU, and we eventually settled.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Am I understand this correctly? You invited Milo Yiannopoulos to speak also? Was that something that kind of triggered the situation? Or am I getting
it
wrong?
No, you got that exactly right. That's how I got them to settle. I invited Milo Yiannopoulos to speak in my class, and they had to shut down the class. Listen to this. De Blasio himself shut my classroom down.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, they couldn't stop it because I had academic freedom, so-called, to have Milo speak in my classroom. Really, they could, NYU couldn't stop it. So they got De Blasio to say it was too dangerous to have him on campus. So they shut it down. That's when I got back on, that's when NYU came back to the table and settled with me.
I don't even know. I mean, this story, I remember this story. I did get, there's so much information coming out. It was just like another log on the fire. I mean, I'm overwhelmed by this type of information. You lived it. What was it like to be right in the middle of the, I mean, what do you call this? The 1984ization of America? You're right in the middle in a university, and do you think it's bizarro world as you're looking around, or what's going through your mind at this time?
I mean, it's scary when you're in the middle of it because these people are coming at you. I had Antifa put a target on my back. They said they wanted me dead.
Really?
You know, yeah.
Because hold on. I'm sorry. This story is just because you had Milo or because the things that you're being critical of some of the social justice stances or both?
Just because I was being critical of the social justice stuff. They actually put a target on my back. They said that I was to be taken out. That's what they said. So it was kind of scary walking around NYU knowing that Antifa wanted me dead. And, you know, they put me in they moved my office from my department where I worked to the Russian department, ironically, sort of in my own personal gulag, as I like to say. They wouldn't move my books. They isolated me in this, like, closet of an office with bare metal shelves, and the whole campus shunned me. It was outrageous.
You said you were a Marxist, and you just kind of woke up. What does a Marxist mean to you? How would you define that?
Well, for me, it meant, like, you know, the working class would take over the means of production and own the society, in effect. I didn't believe in the Bolsheviks. In a way, they turned into a dictatorship, but I didn't think it had to end that way. But now I know that's the only way it goes. It always has to turn into totalitarianism because you have to squelch everything, every competitor in the marketplace. You have to crush. You must crush all opposition because you can't have any questions about the state. You can't have any other parties. It has to be one party, one state, one producer. I mean, it's just, you know, always goes that way. It's logically it's the logical conclusion to what comes about.
I'm not involved in academia. I see it from a distance. I interview a lot of people from academia. We have the perception that academia is just full with this type of philosophy, just like you said. Is that accurate? Is that most of academia has that same idea?
Most of academia is being run by, I'd say all of it, really, is being run by leftist authoritarianism, leftist authoritarians. They are completely convinced that they're absolutely correct, and they can't abide any difference with their viewpoints at all.
That's a pretty big statement you made. Pretty much all academia is run by this attitude. I mean, that's got to be, if you have any differing opinion, that's got to be stifling, I guess, as you found out.
I had a couple friends that could not speak at all. They never told anybody what they thought because they were, you know, they'd be run out instantly. What I did is I actually did say what I thought, and I got run out, of course. This happens all over the place. You know, the stories, I tried to have a log keeping track of it all, but it's impossible. It's just too many. Like you said, it's happening constantly, what they're doing and how they're stifling speech and crushing, you know, disappearing or canceling people, on a regular basis. The stories come up daily. I just couldn't keep a log. It was too much.
Were you ignorant a little bit of the fact that, you know, because you were on the right side, maybe you thought, well, I can express my opinion. I mean, I could, this common sense says that this is wrong. I'm going to express my opinion. Were you ignorant of the ramifications, or did you go in and think,
I didn't sort of know what kind of totalitarians that were living right in my midst. I had no idea just how bad it was. I thought, because I never said anything that differed with what they, you know, I was like the golden boy in my department for many years until I said the wrong thing and everything switched.
I'm so baffled by this process and how complete it seems. I mean, you've made the statement. I mean, looking at it from a distance, the people that we talk to, it seems almost a complete takeover of the, what would you call it? The general trend of thought in academia is almost completely taking over with this philosophy. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. It went on for, as I've studied it now, it's gone on for 5 decades at least. That's how long it took to get to this point. You know, the cultural Marxists, they did say that they were taking a long march through the institutions to subvert the ideology in all the institutions of education, the media, and everywhere else they could get, and they have pretty much permeated everything now.
You said subvert the ideology. What ideology? You mean America? You mean Declaration
Capitalism.
Of Independence?
Capitalism. What they deem to be the ideology that supports capitalism. They wanted to get rid of it and make it socialist.
What is the deal with the push? You know, you can argue back and forth about attacking a Confederate general, and it had reasons on both sides, and I could see that discussion. But wanting to take down statues of Thomas Jefferson, where is this coming from?
Well, it really, if you look at the Cultural Revolution in China from 66 to 76, they wanted to destroy all of the vestiges of what they called the four olds, old ideas, old customs, old beliefs, and old traditions. And so this is really following in line with that exactly. It doesn't matter what it is. If it represents the old way of the society, they want it routed out because they're trying to start over. It's like the French Revolution. They want to start over at year zero.
Do you know, have you ever heard of David Horowitz? I'm sure you probably have.
Oh, yeah. He's a good friend of mine.
Really?
Well, oh, yeah. we became friends after all of this.
Oh, that's what I was gonna. Just what I was gonna ask you, because his story seems very similar to yours. You know,
yeah, we have a very parallel story.
Talking to him, how did that conversation go? How did that transpire?
Well, he was surprised that I could still be a Marxist at this, you know, that I'd still been a Marxist at this point. And I said, David, the whole university system is Marxist. What are you talking about? He couldn't believe it because he thought, you know, it ended with the in 91 with the fall of the Berlin Wall. But
yeah.
You know, that was just symbolic. The depth of the subversion was much greater than even McCarthy understood. I mean, he was right, but he didn't get the point that the ideological subversion was much more than the political affiliations that people had.
Well, explain that statement. That was a deep statement you just made. The depth of subversion was much more than the, what did you say, political affiliation? Explain that.
Excuse me. Yes, he was looking at people that were, you know, formally associated with the Communist Party. But he couldn't possibly trace how much the ideology of socialism had permeated so many aspects of society. I mean, you could see it in television shows. You could see it in all these different areas that he couldn't possibly route out. It was much further and much deeper than just people belonging to the Communist Party. It was really something that was taking place surreptitiously underneath the surface. More than, you know, just people avowedly being calling themselves communists. It was much more subversive than that. They called it, you know, cultural Marxism. That's really what was going on.
What would you say to parents who, you know, working all their life, saving their 401k, you know, putting money in their children's college funds? Then they get accepted to NYU or whatever major school, and they're excited to send their child off, and $30,000 a year or $50,000 a year, whatever it is that they're contributing to have their child go study, you know, a liberal arts degree or whatever. What would you tell the parents that go through that whole process?
Well, let me just give you an example. I have an intern who came to me out of the blue who's at NYU. This was just a few months ago. They said they are being tormented at school. They are being utterly shunned. They are being tortured. They are having all kinds of gaslighting and games played on them. They're being completely ostracized and hounded on campus. I would say keep them the hell out of there. It's a dangerous place. It's that simple.
You care to elaborate, or maybe a different? I mean, I guess you're pretty clear about what you just said. But
if you're anything other than a woke leftist, for example, they're going to make your life a living hell. You have to either be one of them or become one of them, or you'll find yourself in deep water all the time there that you're there. They'll make your life a living hell if they don't drive you out directly.
In that light, then, from that perspective, does it surprise you at all when you see a group like Antifa that's so unbending and unwielding and so aggressive in enforcing whatever it is they're enforcing? Does that surprise you at all that it's turning violent?
No, those are the foot soldiers for this whole movement. They're the extracurricular army, if you will, who are doing the work that really is being done at a higher level, I think, beyond just students or professors. I think we're under a subversion, an infiltration altogether. I mean, I don't know. I can't say with definitive clarity that it's coming from the CCP, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, or whether it's coming from other places. But I think it's a concerted, large-scale subversion movement or campaign that the United States is under. I'm not kidding.
Have you ever read the book or heard of the book Charlotte Isherby, Deliberate Dumbing Down of America?
Yes, I've heard of it. Yeah, I haven't read that.
Well, it's a pretty thick book. I don't mean that. That's a pretty, but it's kind of what you're saying. It traces the beginnings of some of this, and she got so ridiculed. She was in the Department of Education pretty high up under Reagan. And people were coming to her and saying, here, look at this, outcome-based education, cultural Marxism, you know, the Carnegie Foundation from the 30s, what have you, planned societies, all the deal. And that's what the book is about. And it may create a trail back from where you at, back to the beginning of this. It may help you to maybe see it in a different light or add something to it or whatever. I highly recommend it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, when you hear the dumbing down, you just think they're lowering standards. But what they're trying to do is undo the belief in the American way of life, frankly. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Belief in individual liberty, you know, free enterprise, meritocracy, etc. That is being undone right now. I mean, that has been undone. I mean, the reason why they don't want highly functioning, extremely ambitious people is because they don't want to have a world for them at all. I think they're trying to make it such that everybody accepts kind of like a universal basic income, while, you know, on the top it's run by strictly oligarchs. I mean, this is the only thing that makes sense to me, because, after all, you have the tech oligarchs like Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera. These people are actually they're pumping out this socialism as well. I mean, the former CEO of Twitter said on Twitter that if he had his way, he would line up all the capitalists and shoot them in the head. I mean, this is on record. So how do you explain why these large-scale capitalists are actually anti-capitalist? It makes no sense to me unless they're trying to set up like a two-tiered system where you have oligarchs on top and socialism for everybody else.
Well, they love you, Michael, and they want your best interest at heart. They have your best interest at heart.
Yeah, right.
We have a couple minutes before the break. Maybe, you know, I'm just fascinated. You know, it's like talking to David Horowitz. I am fascinated on his, you know, his transformation. I don't know, whatever the word you want to say. I'm just fascinated talking to you, hearing yours. Run me through that. We only got a couple minutes before the break. We'll certainly go to the other side. Run me through the moment where you're part of the system, you're right there, everything's good in your life, you're educational, you're right in the middle of academia, and then something clicks in you, and my God, you're transforming to the point of now you're on the, like, you've just rejected everything that your whole life stands for. I mean, run me through that process.
Okay. right now or after the break?
Sure, we got a minute. We got about a minute or so, 2 minutes before the break.
I'm writing texts on secularism. I'm getting published all over the place. I'm writing treatises on Marxism that are getting published all over the place. I'm becoming a full professor. That's the highest rank. Everything seems to be going very well, but I just couldn't abide what I was seeing taking place. I just saw a very scary prospect that we were being overrun by lunacy, by this kind of social justice madness, and I spoke out against it, and all of these people turned on me en masse. I mean, like, on a dime. And suddenly I became a pariah on campus. Like, I almost had to skulk around just to avoid people. I was shunned to the point where people wouldn't even get on an elevator with me or let me on an elevator with them. Wow. It was that bad. And so, you know, my life just became, like, entirely different. I was a complete pariah on campus. Avoided, shunned, denounced regularly. It was just stunning. And this is what made me see the light, what kind of totalitarianism lurks just beneath the surface of these people's ideology.
Well, we'll talk about this and so much more on the other side. On this broadcast, we've tried to illuminate the history of our country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. To me, that is the antithesis of this Marxist takeover of thought, to me.
Right.
We'll ask you that and more on the other side. I ask you about the election, your book, Thought Criminal, MichaelRechtenwald.com, MichaelRechtenwald.com. A real pleasure. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier. And I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. 9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
If you eat your man of food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
I check my phone every once in a while. There's always breaking news. Well, there's some breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. In Oregon, of course, that's where Bundy, the wildlife refuge, and what's his name, got killed there. But I can't remember his name. And that's a shame. We've interviewed his daughter. Oregon, it seems like patriots have been to the Capitol. I'm getting loose information. I mean, literally barely just happened. I'll read what I got here so far. This is from the Daily Beast. A group of about 300 demonstrators attempted to force their way into two separate entrances of the Oregon State Capitol. Outraged lawmakers, like they have any right to be mad at us. God, what a joke. Outraged lawmakers. Anyway, they were holding a, quote, special session closed to the public. What was that all about? The crowd was loose collection, blah, blah, blah. They went in. There were some troopers there. They tried to stop them. The crowd overran the troopers. More troopers showed up. They declared it an unlawful assembly. I'd like to know what authority they had to do that by the Constitution. Some 100 protesters soon entered the lobby anyway. State troopers again attempted to compel them to leave. It is the people's house, isn't it? The Salem Police Department told that the streets surrounding the Capitol had been closed and residents were being asked to avoid the area if possible due to the protest. I'm here to support the constitutional rights of people and of Oregon business owners. These people are unemployed and their lives are being ruined by this situation and most importantly by a government that seems to have taken totalitarian views. One of the protesters said, only calling himself by Dwayne. By the name Dwayne. Let me get your comment before we get Mike. I mean, this is happening. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, Dwayne said it right. I mean, we're under totalitarian lockdowns. We're under totalitarian mandates of all sorts, and it's about time. And it's very, very hopeful to see people rising up and saying, we're not going to live under this totalitarianism. This is outrageous what they're attempting to do. These leftist authoritarians in states all across the country have been destroying our lives vis-a-vis these lockdowns, these arbitrary mandates, etc. It's about time that people are rising up and saying, you know, we're just not going to take it anymore. This is not constitutional, what they've been doing. No threat like this is you can't use a threat of a virus that has a 99.5% survivability rate to lock people up and destroy their businesses while the big box stores go on. Amazon's profits go up. They're trying to wipe out small business is really what it's at. And it's unbelievable.
What does the Constitution, to a Marxist, what does the Constitution mean to them?
It's an antiquated document that they want to get rid of. They think it stands in the way of a Marxist revolution.
Well,
and
yeah,
they would
obvious.
Rewrite it. But, yeah. There are certain Marxist groups that have rewritten their own constitution for the United States, which, of course, would be a socialist one. This is good news. I hope it happens everywhere.
I'm not sure. We were talking about some of the stories, you know, the first hour before you on. And like I mentioned to you during the break, the pro-life, association that their merchant account just got shut down. No warning. No, like, well, you got to find another merchant account. We'll give you 2 weeks or we'll give you a month. No, it was like, nope, boom. One day on, one day off. Different things being shoved down people's throat left and right like that. And I said the question, what are you going to do about it? Because that's what they're telling. That's basically what the government's. That's to the point they're at. They don't.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? Basically,
anybody that's not woke, as it were, and wokeness. Make no mistake, wokeness is a totalitarian ideology. It is about squelching and crushing other views. It isn't about helping blacks or helping. Some minorities or something like that. It is a totalitarian disguise for socialism. There's no question about it.
Okay, we're hearing this in Oregon. I got to believe that this is not the end of this, especially if the lockdowns continue. Where do you see this going?
Well, I don't know how much longer Americans can take, but they're foisting on us. I mean, they're really trying to destroy free enterprise, freedom of movement, freedom of association, religious expression, and freedom of speech, really. Because you see, you know, YouTube and other outlets totally banishing any talk of either the virus, the vaccine, or the elections. So anything that violates their creed is being crushed. So I don't know how much longer we can take this without rising up. I mean, and there you see a small uprising in Oregon. It's hopefully a sign of things to come.
Supposedly, people are getting maced by the police. And my first thought was good, you know, and that's not good, but my first thought is good. Cause let them hurt, let them get out of control. Cause that's just going to rally more support to them.
Right.
And it's kind of, no, you know,
notice how the police basically stood down when Antifa was burning
and pillaging
and rampaging throughout cities all over the country. And
thank you.
Patriots rise up and they start to mace them right away. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's illegal. Get out of here. You're going to be maced. You know, we're going to arrest you. I haven't asked to this point. I haven't asked you about the election. Now's probably a good time to eject it. What do you make of what just happened with the election?
Well, I mean, there was massive election fraud, and it was a coordinated effort to destroy Trump, to put in Biden. He is obviously a figurehead, strictly, or a puppet for what they want to do, which is to institute this kind of globalist governmental takeover of the United States. Excuse me.
No problem. Take your time.
I don't have COVID. I just have a slight cold.
Well, I don't think you can get it over the radio. At least they may tell you that. They may tell you that next, but right, as of right now, they haven't said anything. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mean, there's so many ways with which they undertook this fraud that it's almost impossible to catalog them all again. Here we have, you know, stuffing ballots, pre-printed ballots being shipped in, ballots being hidden under tables and then run through when there's no observers, electronic fractioning of votes, electronic switching of votes. All of this stuff, I believe, has happened. The problem is we can't get a hearing on it. We can't get any court to even look at the evidence, including the Supreme Court. So, I mean, it's stunning. It's stunning the degree to...
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. Finish, Michael.
Well, I mean, it's stunning the degree to which even our courts seem to be subverted.
I had a discussion. This is I don't know, a decade ago, maybe not quite that. I don't know, a while ago. And some people that were involved, you know, legally trying to enforce the Constitution, what have you. And we were discussing, not in some revolutionary kind of way, but just, you know, at what point does America get fed up with what's going on? At what point is it time to do something? And they made probably the most succinct and profound observation on revolution. They said, it's not time to revolt. He says, but I'll tell you when it is time to revolt. It will be time to revolt when there is no recourse in the courts anymore. And up until now, up until that point, there was always recourse in the courts. What we're seeing now with the Supreme Court case is being the civil asset forfeiture by the police is another example of this. We are seeing the demarcation line. Texas has original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court. The states do. But yet the Supreme Court would not hear it. They are demanded by the law that they have to hear it. Where else can Texas be heard? There's no place else for them to be heard. They have a grievance. They at least have to be heard by the Supreme Court. So,
and they're told they have no standing.
And they're told they have no standing. Of course they have standing. They have original jurisdiction standing. And so the question becomes for Texas, and you heard the head of the Republican Party in Texas there asked the question, well, maybe it's time that some states who actually follow the Constitution come together and secede. And so that's kind of the same thing. At what point is revolution necessary? Well, my friend who told me this a decade or about so ago, the point to revolt is when there's no recourse in courts anymore. That's the time to pick up arms and shoot whatever's in front of you. Because you forget it. Because, anyway, go ahead. Your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, as it is, we don't have legal recourse. And I don't know if any case is going to make it to the courts, to the Supreme Court, that will be heard. Once we find out that the last possible case was rejected, it won't, you know, not even heard, just thrown out, I think we have no other recourse but to revolt.
Gosh, that's a big statement, Michael. God, we do have a caller. I want to get to him because maybe he's got some information about what's going on in Oregon. Let's get him. Alan in Texas, you're live on the air, my friend. Alan in Texas, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good day, Daniel and Michael. I just wanted to bring up, you know, a point that I've noticed lately. Michael, you were on the inside. You perfectly understand what they're doing to the generations that are under us, the mind control that's being done. You brought up Charlotte Isherby, you know, the deliberate dumbing down. And that book is so poignant. I mean, I cook for myself. I live by myself. I cook. And I've noticed recently, I've gone and I bought some bags of flour. There is now a warning on a bag of flour saying that you do not eat it. You know, don't just grab a handful of it and shove it in your pie hole. You've got to cook it first. How long has flour been a major food staple on this planet? Thousands of years. And now they have to put a warning label on it? Wow. What we're up against, Michael, you understand what they're doing to these people. They're teaching them nothing. They're making them helpless.
Yes, that's exactly right. They're trying to make us totally helpless. They want to make us.
I just wanted to throw that in. It just amazed me when I saw a warning label on a bag of flour. Thank you for being there. Thank you for waking up. And Daniel, love your show. I'll let y'all go on.
Well, stay there one second, Alan. Are you there?
Okay.
Yeah. I remember being a little kid, Michael. I don't know how old you are, but when I was a little kid, we had this game, and I loved this game. It was called Jarts. You remember that game, Jarts? Does anybody remember that?
It's
the takeoff of lawn darts. It's called Jarts. So you had this, it had almost like an arrow, a small little arrow in your hand. It's kind of big. It has weighted at the end with a pointed metal tip. And you would throw it in the air to a circle, kind of almost like horseshoes, like, 25 feet away or something, and try to throw it in this circle. And it had a metal tip. And it was sharp. And if you threw the thing 30 feet in the air and you ran underneath it, it'd go right through your eye. But that was America.
I did play that, and that is totally gone except for, adults only. And even then, they might not even let adults have them if it's even still around.
It's not around anymore.
Are they going to put a warning on a boat anchor saying, do not tie yourself to it before you throw it into the water? it's getting to that point of idiocy. We're up against not just the SOBs that are doing this to us, but everyone that they've indoctrinated with this learned helplessness.
We're fighting against our own ignorance at this point, our own learned helplessness, as you say.
Glorified, well, and if you're not ignorant, you're like what happened to Michael. If you're not ignorant and just brainless, you are degraded and made to look stupid for being smart.
The answer to your question about the jarts, they do have the jarts, but it has a plastic flat tip and it doesn't stick in the ground. It just kind of sits there like a weight.
I learned how to build things. We had what was called an erector set. It had all these little steel girders of different lengths and all these little screws and nuts and bolts and stuff. And you could build a dinosaur. You could build a skyscraper. You could build a candy lever. You could only put candy lever something out so far before, if it wasn't reinforced right, it would topple over. People have no concept of basic physics, basic their health. Do they even have health classes in school anymore? We had health classes, taught you, eat, you are what you eat, eat right and you'll stay healthy. I'm sure.
Well, they got sex ed. They got sex ed, Alan. They don't have health, but they got sex ed.
Oh my God. Yeah, we're up against trouble, guys. We're in a lot of trouble. I'll let y'all get on with your
thanks for the call, Alan. Thank you,
y'all.
Buddy. God bless.
Bye.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, they have sex ed in which they're telling you that there's no gender. They're now saying that babies are not going to, they're not going to designate in some states whether the child is a male or a female because they have to choose that later. It's up to them to choose what their gender is. This is what's happening.
Rebecca Friedrich's out of...
I have a son who's in college and they actually say in his textbook that there is no such thing as a sex difference. It's a social construction.
God almighty. Wow. Can you take a pic, have him take a picture of that? An email to us maybe or something? God almighty. God, you just totally threw me off my track. Rebecca Friedrichs. She's a former teacher in the teachers union out of California. She's been exposing this and some of the things they're teaching. It's a family friendly show here, so earmuffs to people. But when they get 10 years old, they have condom relay races and they can go have an abortion at 12, and the parents don't even know about it. Blah blah blah. At what point is this our responsibility, Michael, where we have to wake up and put it on our backs?
Well, right now, it's been our responsibility. They have subverted us and subverted the culture and the society for a long time. We didn't know it, so we weren't really responsible when we were completely in the dark. But now we know what's going on. So it's our responsibility now. Absolutely.
Do you think that there is, in the 1770s, before the American Revolution, revolution was fomented in the churches? Literally, you're talking 20 to 30% of the churches were very aggressive. King George, we don't have a difference of political opinion. King George is offending God, and by God, this can't stand. That was the conviction that was being imprinted in America. I don't see that anywhere anymore. Do you think that we have that moral fortitude, that moral high ground, that conviction in America anymore?
Well, unfortunately, the churches, many of them, have been subverted by this social justice nonsense. I mean, I see the social justice Christianity being pushed, and I've seen it in my own relatives taking it up. They think that, you know, social justice is what Jesus Christ was about, you know, not salvation of your soul, excuse me, but rather the emancipation of particular social groups. You know, there's nothing in the Bible about that, but this is what's being taught, even in the churches. So many churches have been subverted as well. You know, I can tell you how I think it all fits together.
Go ahead.
You know, wokeness is to make people feel guilty for being so guilty that they feel they deserve nothing, that they deserve no economic ability, no professional future, no liberty, and so on and so forth, because they're trying to institute this great reset, really. This great reset, which would put us basically in the position of serfs under control by AI and other types of technologies to surveil upon us, to track us, to trace us, and to completely control us, giving us very little economic, you know, really no economic mobility, no professional mobility, basically just more or less people under absolute control without any economic or professional or life aspirations that we could see. This is really what they're up to.
There's two views of the world that I see, two major, at least in the last couple hundred years. Either we are endowed by our creator, the kind of American Declaration of Independence view. We have, you know, if you want to go to the Bible, we've fallen from greatness or divinity, and we've come in here and we're trying to raise back to greatness. And by this pursuit of happiness, by our endowment that's been given to us, we can create, we can buy, we can, transact, we can interact, and we can pursue truth so that we can raise our happiness. We can pursue happiness, because happiness cannot be given to you. You have to be free to be able to pursue it. That's the inherent nature of mankind. Or B, that we're basically talking cows to be herded and used and manipulated at the whim of a quote unquote greater good for the herd, or the greater good of this ruling elite that knows better than us. That, to me, those are the two competing ideas.
That's absolutely correct. Those are the two competing ideas. And unfortunately, the second one, B, is the one that is being pushed by the elite and adopted by a good, 50% of the population, at least.
You know, we hear this talk of unity. Let's have unity. I don't see these are mutually exclusive ideas to me. I don't think there is no unity. There will be no unity.
No, I mean, Biden says in 30 days we begin to heal or something like that. I see no healing, and I see no unity with this kind of belief system. I can't be in union with that. I'm sorry. I can't join forces with them. I can't unify with them. And I hope there's many, many more millions who will think the same way.
Your book is Thought Criminal, and I'm sure they can get it at Amazon or what have you, at least now. At least for right now. Michael Rechtenwald.com is your website. Why should people buy Thought Criminal? What are they going to learn from it?
Well, what they'll see in Thought Criminal is a potential future of the kind we're talking about, in which, you know, extended up in the future, not so far, I can't say. I don't give it a date, you know, as to when this will or could take place. But it is a dystopian future in which people are connected to this collective mind vis-a-vis nanobots, which they're calling a virus, and they're propagating this virus on purpose while telling you they're trying to keep you from getting it. And your individuality, your very individual selfhood, is at risk, because if you're connected to collective mind, you're no longer yourself. They should buy the book, first of all, for the idea that it's a thriller. It's quite an entertaining read, I should say. And so, and it has a hopeful ending, I want to say that.
I am so jazzed to have you on. We got a minute or so. There's a quote by Rudolf Steiner, who is from the Theosophic Society from the early 1900s, you know, kind of that Aldous Huxley, Bernard Shaw, Brave New World, all kind of crowd, kind of. I read the quote earlier. I'm going to read the part of it again. In the future, we will eliminate the soul with medicine. Under the pretext of a healthy point of view, there will be a vaccine by which the human body will be treated as soon as possible directly at birth, so that the human being cannot develop the thought of the existence of soul and spirit. My God, this is exactly
what Thought Criminal has, what I have operative in Thought Criminal. Once this vaccine or virus were together in my book, once this infects you, then you no longer have a sense of who yourself is. You'll never have any idea whether what you're thinking are your own thoughts, or whether they've been supplied by collective mind. So, yeah, I'd take a look at it, because it's the future if we don't make a sudden change.
Is there, turn that music down just a little bit, Tom. Is there, we got about 40 seconds. Is there anything that we should not sacrifice to repel this, that we should uphold the Declaration of Independence? Is that the line? Is there anything that we should hold back in this fight?
No, I mean, we shouldn't hold anything back. I don't know if you're asking me if there's a line which we should never let them take us across. Yeah, I mean, we're at that line right now. It's all these things combined. Yeah, we have to stop it now.
Stay right there, Michael. Thought Criminal's a book, michaelrechtenwald.com. Ladies and gentlemen, happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you. Love you. Merry Christmas. We'll see you soon.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.